welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 212 of the podcast, and it is the 17th of March 2015 as I record this, a little early for the show which goes out this weekend, but I will be flying over from London to Charleston in the US for PubSense Summit, which is very exciting. I've never been to Charleston before, and then I'm heading down to Savannah, somewhere I've always wanted to go since I read Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil years and years ago. So it's a combination of speaking, business and maybe some research. I have some ideas for a novella at least set in Savannah. You know, that'll be fun. You may also hear from my voice. I'm a little bit sick. I've been sick for like 9 days now. It's ridiculous. It's one of these killer bugs. It's going around London at the moment. It has struck down many of my compadres in town. So yes, apologies for my my voice, and you will hear that in a couple of the interviews. Because I'm away for 10 days, I've scheduled a few things in advance, so you're going to get the husky Joanna. But today, anyway, I have a discussion with Nick Stevenson, and he's been on a few shows recently, but I've learned a lot from Nick in recent months, I guess, and wanted to bring on the show and share some of the things I've learned. So last time I had Jim Kukwal on, we talked about marketing stuff, but on a more of a kind of conceptual level. And today Nick and I get into some of the weeds. So I hope you'll learn at least one new thing from this show. Wherever you are on your author journey, you should get one tip from this, whether you're just starting, in which case there'll be lots, or if you are advanced, like myself, I guess, I wrote a book on marketing, but I'm still learning. So I hope you'll find this interesting. But before getting into the interview, a few things. I've been having a hell of a busy, well, I say busy. I mean, this illness laid me out and I spent like a week in bed, barely able to do anything. A couple of days, you know, in the dark with no stimulation. And then I've been reading a lot, and I was sick for my 40th birthday, which was both bad on one side but good on another, because I had, you know, lots of deep and meaningful thinking. And I read a really brilliant book, which I'm recommending to everyone, which is Bold by Peter Diamandis and Stephen Kotler. And that's bolder than B-O-L-D, not B-A-L-D. I do love the bold, by the way, both of those. But in terms of that book, it really kind of fired me up around all sorts of things. And one of the things I got enthusiastic about is virtual reality and the future of publishing. And I wrote an article in a very feverish couple of hours, actually. It really was quite high. called Solving the Discoverability Problem: Virtual Reality in the Future of Publishing, which I put on a blog called The Future Book, and I've also reposted on the Creative Pen. And it's all about Oculus Rift and all the other tech possibilities of VR, including High Fidelity, which is kind of the first off the rank of communities for a VR world, you know, Web 3.0, you know, how the virtual reality will be the next big shift in media, like some really big thinking. And I appreciated the time to kind of catch up on all of that. And I wanted to particularly thank Gillian Hamilton, who is a listener and also put a tweet on Twitter, obviously. And she said something like, we should have a drinking game, and you have to take a shot for every time I mention Oculus Rift on a podcast in an excited way. So that begins now, Gillian. Take a shot. But I am excited about it, and I know some people think it's like, oh no, not another thing. But this is 2 to 5 years' time, really. So if you're at all interested in virtual reality, what I think the future of, you know, bookstores, retail, all of that. And if you read that book, Bold, by Peter Diamandis, you're going to get into it anyway. But I'm going to be interviewing a guy called Nathan Meunier. I hope I've said that right. In a few months, goodness, I don't know if it's months or weeks at the moment. The podcast is scheduled for a long time ahead. But we're going to be talking about gaming and hopefully VR, because in gaming they're already into this. So I'm determined that publishing should not be years behind the curve, which they are usually in technology, but that we're actually getting ahead of the curve. So anyway, it's something I'm very excited about, and you will hear more, I promise. So you don't need to follow it too much. I will keep you in touch with that. So that was one thing I got into. I also did post a big sort of lessons learned by my 40th birthday post, which I'll link to in the show notes. But probably one of the big things that seemed to resonate with people was I talked about balancing consumption with creation and, you know, make stuff, don't just buy stuff. If you read a book, then write a blog post about it, or, you know, actually write a book using those principles, or, you know, record a video and don't just watch videos. And if you do a course, then immediately put it into practice. So that, and that balance between consumption and creation, I think, is what has enabled me to do what I've done. And, you know, like anybody, I constantly feel self-doubt and, you know, I'm not doing enough, but we all feel that way. And then I've also, you know, if you're amused by pictures, I have some pictures from my 30th birthday. So if you want to see me face painted, then creativity and entrepreneurship lessons learned by my 40th birthday, posted on March 12th, 2015. And yeah, so see you at 50, or see you at 1 week past 40, obviously. A couple of other things I just wanted to point out, and you know, I do see my job as giving you updates and cool stuff on this show. One is that audio, and the podcast episode after this, I'll be talking more about the power of audio with Viv Oyolu, but mentioning it now because Apple, I watched the Apple launch of all the latest stuff, tech launch, very exciting. One of the things I think is a game changer, if you are interested at all in audio, creating as well as listening, obviously, Apple CarPlay and Google Auto, they kind of announced, well, obviously Apple announced that Apple CarPlay is going to be in all the major car manufacturers starting like now. So essentially, and Google Auto is the Google version, but this is the missing link really for commuters in their cars. You don't have to kind of try and plug in your smartphone anymore. You'll actually be able to stream audio from your car from the internet. So this is like a big shift, and it's going to be mainstream essentially. And of course, if you take it further and you look at self-driving cars, which, you know, they're starting now in several London cities, and will, you know, I also agree that within probably 5 to 10 years, you know, it will be the majority of transport. Certainly, I haven't had a car for 4 years. So, you know, I'm looking forward to self-driving cars and taxis, so I don't have to interact with taxi drivers. Anyway, you can tell I'm on a few cold and flu drugs today. So all legal, promise. One other cool thing, oh no, just on the Google and Apple CarPlay, etc., I just think that the future of podcasts, audiobooks, audio content in general, this is pretty huge. So I would, you know, if you're thinking of starting a podcast or doing audiobooks or, you know, that type of thing, definitely a good idea, in my opinion. I think, I don't know about you, but I skim blogs, and I listen to a lot more audio now, especially because you can put it on 1.5 speed. If you're listening to me on 1.5 speed right now, I bet it's really funny because I'm speaking quite fast. But I really like doing that with audio, so I expect audio to get much bigger. And the last thing is something I heard from Simon Whistler on the Rocking Self-Publishing podcast, and that is, Inbox Pause, which you can see at inboxpause.com, which is an amazing plugin, free plugin for Gmail. And it's just changed my life in the last few days. Essentially, you can press pause on your inbox. I mean, obviously, if you use offline email, it's fine. But I use Gmail, and it is fantastic. So if you struggle with your Gmail, get inboxpause.com. It's fantastic. Okay, so you know, we should really get into the show. Right, this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and you know I always get excited about global sales. And in fact, my Africa map keeps getting some new dots, and I won't get excited about Africa tech right now, but it's, again, read Peter Diamandis and you will also get excited about African economy. But my Burkina Faso is still at one sale, but now I have Namibia, Kenya and Nigerian sales, which is very cool. And I expect those sales are on mobile devices, because the African economy is, you know, gone massively mobile, skipping desktops, skipping laptops. Smartphone economy, cell phone economy, you know, SMS stuff, just amazing. Anyway, you'll hear from Kobo Writing Life in a minute. And this corporate sponsorship pays for my hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, and a big thanks to new supporters, Matty Dalrymple, Doug. Thanks, Doug. I'm sure there's lots of Dougs listening, but you know who you are, Doug. C. Stephen Manley, Stanley B. Trice, and Scott Jarrell. Thank you to all of you guys, and thank you to everybody supporting on Patreon. And on Patreon, you can support me with just a few dollars or even $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month, so less than a coffee a month if you go to Starbucks. And you can support the show at Patreon, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or, of course, you can buy my books. So here's a word from our corporate sponsor, and then we'll get into the interview.
Hey, Creative Pen fans. This is Camille Mofidi, the European manager for Kobo Writing Life, based in Paris. Did you know you could publish and sell your ebooks very easily all over the world with Kobo, reaching an international audience in 190 countries? Plus, you can now benefit from 2 brand new features on our website, readers' reviews and series numbers, that will help raising awareness and visibility for all your books. For more details, please visit our blog www.kobowritinglife.com, where these features are fully presented. Thank you for listening, and now back to your wonderful host, Joanna.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Nick Stevenson. Hello, Nick.
Hello.
Hello.
And happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much. We won't go into that.
No.
So just a little introduction to Nick. Nick is a best-selling thriller author with the Leopold Blake series. He's also the author of Supercharge Your Kindle Sales, which is a super book, and creator of the fantastic Your First 10,000 Readers free video series and course. And we're going to talk lots of interesting stuff today. But first up, Nick, just give us a bit more about your background and how you got into writing and marketing.
Sure. I mean, I think I've done pretty much everything you can think of. So we'll skip forward a few years. I went to university. I started off doing English literature as a degree. Realized quite quickly that doesn't really translate into any sort of employment opportunities. And kind of switched my course over to a law degree, and followed that through for quite a while. The equivalent of $100,000 later, you know, 4 or 5 years of education behind me, go and get myself a lawyer job, and realize I just couldn't do it at all. It just wasn't something that I wanted to do. So I'm sat there in the office. I'm thinking, you know, I've got, well, you know, fingers crossed, 40 odd years of, you know, full-time career ahead of me. Do I really want to be doing this day in, day out for the next 40 years? And I realized quite quickly that I didn't want to do that. So I started looking at other avenues, and marketing was actually something that really interested me. So I sort of transitioned into a marketing role. And then I think realized that I could actually take a lot of these concepts and apply it to my own business, and, you know, set up set up a few failed businesses that didn't work very well, but made a little bit of money. So it was encouraging. And then finally, Kindle came along in sort of 2010. I first became aware of it 2011. And I thought, you know, this is a perfect mix of business for me, because one, I get to write and I get to be creative, which was something I'd always really enjoyed doing when I got the chance, you know. But it was always sort of, you get to do a creative writing module as part of your degree or in high school or something like that. It was never something that really kind of jumped out as a career possibility until Kindle came along and, you know, kind of opened up those avenues for people. So I thought, you know, worst case scenario, I have a great time writing something that I've always wanted to write. And if it makes some money, great. And if not, who cares? Because I get to do something fun. And, you know, applying the marketing skills I'd learned over time to the book business that I'd set up really, really helped. So, you know, two years later, I'm making a six-figure income from publishing. And, you know, I finally realized that, you know, there's a lot of authors out there who kind of struggle with the marketing side of things. You know, they've got the writing down pat, they've got the publishing sorted out, but they've not quite got the marketing figured out in their heads. So this is where your first 10,000 readers came along. Mm-hmm. And I realized I could put all of what I've learned over the last sort of 10 years down into a sort of system and a process and a step-by-step blueprint for people. And they can get the same sort of results. So that's where that came along. And I suppose that kind of condenses the last 10 years or so down into
one. And I have to just add there that given, you know, I am a bit older than you for sure, but I think both of us, we are now in a generation where there is no retirement. And, you know, the longevity stuff means it's not 40 years of work. It's about another, like, 100 years of work, I reckon, now. Yeah. So you've got, if you don't love what you do, the thought of longevity would be really scary. So Anyway, just sort of point that out.
It's true. It's very true.
And what I love about what we do, that, you know, we don't want to retire. P.D. James, you know, died at 96 recently. We're still writing a manuscript. Yeah.
That's what I want to be like. That. I want to be like on my deathbed with my family around me. And I'm just, someone bring me like a laptop. I've got something. I need to write an email. I need to write the next chapter. I need to do something.
Oh, it won't be email then, by then. It'll be something.
It won't be some kind of psychic.
Yeah. Psychic link.
Tweet or something. I don't know. Psychic. But, you know, I'll want to do something because I think I've got some kind of weird ADD. I always want to be moving and growing and doing something cool. So yeah, it's kind of knackering, which is why I've aged so horribly. So yeah, I'm only 19.
You do look pretty young, to be fair, considering how many children you have. But we'll come back.
It's flattering light. That's the trick to everything.
Anyway, let's get on with the show. So supercharge your Kindle sales, which is how I heard of you. And of course, you're British too. And it's a nice, super title that was very attractive, and we're going to come back to the British versus American thing in a bit, but it focused on the keyword optimization for Amazon. Now today we are assuming that people have done some kind of optimization on their books. I hope my listeners are not just typing in romance or thriller into their keyword phrase, but perhaps you could just give a very brief what, you know, the keyword, what is the keyword thing, and then give us a bit more of an advanced keyword thing and your tips for using that you know, that in your books.
Well, trying to sum it up as quickly as possible is basically Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Kobo, all of these online bookstores, they're not like bookstores in the traditional sense. So authors for hundreds of years have approached publishing in the same way. You know, you write a manuscript, you submit it to a publisher or an agent, and they deal with the sales, and they go direct to bookshops, and the bookshops stock it in certain areas, depending on who's paid for what and, you know, various other factors. But now we're selling online, and online is completely different. So Amazon, the Kindle store, is not a bookstore, it's a search engine. And we have to approach selling books in exactly the same way as we would if we were trying to rank our web pages at the top of Google. So that means we have to become comfortable with search engine optimization, SEO, which is a very dry term, which basically just means that you have to be really specific about your audience and what they're looking for. So as you kind of alluded to, if you're thinking about keywords and titles and product descriptions, you want to be focusing very specifically on your genre and your audience. So if you've written a historical romance, don't list your book under romance, because there's something like 120,000 other books listed under romance per hour. And You need to really, really narrow that down as much as possible. And Amazon makes that very easy for you. You can use different categories, different keywords. You can play with your titles, your product descriptions. There's like no end to the amount of optimization that you can do. But really, summing it up is be as narrow and specific as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Because you can't compete with 120,000 other authors unless you're already a big name. It's just not going to happen. But you can compete with 1,000 other books, and you'll get a lot more sales and a lot more visibility because you're not in such a crowded pool. And that's essentially all we're talking about, is just narrowing down that audience, making sure people know that your book is for them when they come across it.
Yeah. And then let's just talk about keyword phrase as opposed to keyword, because that's confusing. Mm.
Yeah. So when you set up a book on Amazon and the other stores, we'll focus on Amazon, you get to type 7 keyword phrases into your dashboard. And it's a keyword phrase. So a keyword phrase might be 2, 3, 4 words. Mm. And that would count as one keyword phrase. And you get 7 of those. So instead of using like romance, thriller, mystery, you might think about writing something like historical romance series as one keyword phrase. Or
18th century historical romance exactly. series. Yeah.
And there are ways that you can really narrow this down and find out what these keywords are. And, you know, I've got a bunch of material and videos that can show you exactly how to do this. And we'll talk about that a bit later on if you like. But it's not as hard as it sounds. And it's a very simple tweak that you can make. It takes, it takes 5 minutes to do. It takes a bit longer to research. But it's something that you can start seeing results with straight away if you do it properly. So it's a great, great thing to do.
Yeah, so that's one thing for people to think about. And of course, if you start typing into the Amazon search bar, things will drop down. And that's the kind of manual way to do it. And I actually really like doing that. It's really fun. But the other thing is browse categories. Because I just recently redid mine. Again, you always remind me and then I go back and do mine. And I discovered conspiracy thriller is a keyword category. Yeah. Of course, it's stuffed full of big names like Dan Brown sits in. Conspiracy thriller, but conspiracy thriller is a category you can't choose as a category. You have to put it in your keyword, as is women's adventure, for example, and men's adventure actually. So just explain browse categories.
Well, there's two tips. The categories on Amazon that you can choose during publication, these are the standard sort of BISAC categories really, but there are several others that Amazon includes to make browsing easier for readers. You know, so men's adventure is a category on Amazon, but it's not one that you can pick during the publication process. I think I might be wrong.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But what you can do is there's two ways that you can get added to that subcategory. And you can either use the right keyword, men's adventure, and get added to it using, you know, the algorithms, and they'll automatically do it for you. Or you can just email KDP directly and say, would you mind adding me to this category, please? And I've used both. So you can do it either way. So you can use 7 keywords that don't mention a specific category at all. And then you can email KDP and say, would you mind adding me to such and such category? Mm. And then you're getting kind of the best of both worlds, because you've got these keywords that are helping you show up in these searches that people are doing. But you're also showing up in the categories as well. And if you can get onto the front page of the categories, the top 20, then that's a good boost of visibility that you get on top of keywords as well. So it's a great tip.
Yeah, and good to do before paying for any kind of promotion, because it will.
Yeah.
And with the keywords, I mean, I'm now thinking about 13 different categories with keywords. It's actually stunning when you like spend some good time on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is. And the other tip I have on that is spend some time really looking at the books that are like yours, because so many times you don't even know what categories there are out there. But if you have a look at other people's books, that might help people.
Well, I actually got accidentally added to a literary fiction category once. I have no idea how this happened, but it was like the day before I had a BookBub advertisement. And I mean, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of page hits, you know, from these free promotions that I was doing. And I was somehow listed in a literary fiction category. And my books aren't literary fiction at all. You know, they're fun adventure romps that don't take themselves too seriously, and they're a bit lighthearted and a little bit ridiculous, because that's what I like to write and it's what I like to read. But if you're looking for a literary fiction, you know, or a gritty, realistic sort of police procedural, you're not going to like my books. So I have no idea how my books ended up in sort of literary. It was like literary, and then it was in mysteries. So it was like this sort of cuckoo's calling kind of thing. And it got slammed with so many bad reviews because it was in the wrong category. Yeah,
really,
but on the face of it, it looks like it should be in the right category because it was mysteries, but it was the wrong kind of mystery.
Mm.
And that's one other benefit of being in the right category is you're giving readers what they're expecting. They're going to have a better experience and you're going to sell more books.
Mm. And one other thing I picked up from your course, which is fantastic.
Thank you.
Your first 10,000 readers is doing a Q&A with the author on the book description. Just talk a bit about that because that's a super tip.
So I'm by no means the first author to do this. I mean, I think having a sort of interview with the author, Q&A with the author in the product description is a great way to tell readers what the book's about, a little bit of the story about why you wrote it, what's unique about this book without coming across too salesy, because you're having this sort of conversation with yourself that's aimed at readers. But one of the other reasons that you can use it is you can use it to get more keywords into your product description. So on Amazon, you've got like a very small amount of space where you can fit the back blurb in. But then you've got all this space underneath where you can add more text. Mm. So on Amazon.com, a reader has to click the Show Me More button to see it. But all those words in there are being indexed by the search engine technology. So it's a great opportunity to put some more keywords in there to get more relevance. Mm. So if you've written a 18th century historical romance, you know, you can mention those words in that product description below the fold. Mm. So it's not interfering with your perfectly crafted sort of two paragraph blurb, which from personal experience, I know can often take longer than the bloody book to actually get right.
Yeah.
So you can do this sort of, you know, I do like an interview with myself underneath and I can put these keywords in there without it sounding like I'm stuffing them in and trying to just, you know, get as many keywords in as possible. You're putting them in a more kind of natural way.
Mm.
And that's a great way of introducing sort of more search engine optimization into your book pages as well.
It is a super tip and one I have yet to implement, but I'm going to very soon. It's like, must do that. And I just had a question on that. I know Amazon doesn't like people using other authors' names, but can you in that or interview with the author, one common question is, you know, what are your favorite books?
Yeah,
do you think that's too dangerous to put into that field?
Well, Amazon very specifically says you can't use another author's name in your keywords or in your title or in any way to make people think that you're associated with that author in some way. But you can, as far as I understand the rules, I mean, don't quote me on it. I'm not an Amazon lawyer. But as far as I understand the rules, in the product description, you can say something like, if you're a fan of James Patterson, you'll love this book because, you know, something like that.
Or I could, have a question, which is, you know, what are the books you love to read
to
me as the author? And I can list out some of the books that might resonate.
Exactly. I mean, the overall kind of point behind all of this is you've got to give the reader genuine information about the book.
Yeah,
that's, you know, and that's the whole point is, you know, give them enough information to make a buying decision without being misleading. So if your book is like James Patterson or whoever, then by all means put it in, but don't just like copy and paste James Patterson like 50 times at the bottom just to try and rank for that search term, because, you know, that's the sort of thing that would get you into trouble. So, you know, just use your common sense. If it feels right, chances are it is, but, you know, if you're not sure, you can always check with the KDP people.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. And then I read something on KBOARS. I don't know if you saw this in the last... they talked about it on the Sell More Book Show, about stuffing lots of words. And this back to the keyword field, about stuffing loads of words, like literally 8 or 9 words into one field, because there's actually doesn't seem to be any limit. If you don't put a comma between things, it counts it as one. And I read that and I thought, I don't know, you know, what do you think about that?
I haven't tried it because I don't think that's what Amazon want you to do. So it might work for a little while and then stop working. So if you're basing your entire business on a loophole that you've found, that could close at any time. And then what are you going to do? So I would much rather focus on sticking to the rules as they stand and making, you know, the best opportunity of that. And if you happen to find a loophole, you know, by all means exploit it. If it's, you know, something that's genuine and it's not misleading anybody, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing that unless, you know, someone at KDP has said, yeah, that's fine.
No, I agree. And I think in general, all this SEO stuff is, you know, look at where Google was 2 years ago, you know, probably 2 years ago. And then every change they make makes it more and more natural to rank, as in the good sites that have good information and don't try and do any games actually are the ones that win on Google, aren't they?
And it's good for customers. I mean, if you look at the, was it Penguin? I think they called it the Penguin update.
Penguin, well, panda, hummingbird.
Penguin, panda, whatever it was, some kind of weird animal. If you look at the internet marketing forums, they get so annoyed about this and they're like, they've ruined my life. But actually, you know, you weren't offering any value to start with. Mm. And that's what this is all about. Search engine optimization is like the basics that you can do. Mm. It's not something that is going to change your career overnight. I mean, it can do. It certainly can do, but it's not normal for this to happen. What you should think about SEO is it's something about how to find the right audience, research it, set it up, and move on. Do not let it bother you. Don't spend months tweaking keywords. You know, get on, write more books, build your audience. That's the important thing. SEO is just, you know, one step on the way towards doing this. Don't let it hold you up, because it's not really that fun. And we want to do marketing that's fun, because it makes us feel good. And it, you know, if we're going to be doing this a lot, we want to be enjoying our work. So don't get too hung up on it. It's important, but don't let it hold you back from, you know, getting where you need to be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of, I like, you know, this is the first time I've done mine in ages, like 6-8 months or something. So I think kind of going in every 6 months, having a look, finding out what's kind of changed, you know, giving it another go, it's probably all right. But I don't monitor data.
It's just like something to be aware of. You know, if you've got that mindset that you are selling something on a search engine, if you approach your business like that, you get that mindset, it will all flow naturally. You know, you don't have to worry about whether you should use a comma here or a hyphen here, whether that's going to make any difference. You know, just pick the right audience for you, keep an eye on it, but don't get too hung up on it. You know, it's much more important to write more books and much more important to build your audience. So that's the main thing. Build that audience up, and then you've got that direct line of communication to people.
All right, so the build your audience thing. And I was just saying to you before we started recording, I can't believe we're still talking about email lists and how funny it is. You know, I started the Creative Pen in 2008, which was, you know, not early. It was early for self-publishing, but it was, you know, and there were that the email list was, I started on day one. And what's so funny is people are now talking about email lists as if this is something brand new, whereas you've been in marketing a long time. This is not new. But why is it that email lists are still such a big deal for authors? You know, is it just that people are not listening, or are they not doing it right? You know, what is your feeling around the email list thing?
I mean, I believe it's because it's a very new concept for a lot of authors. So like we talked about earlier, and my voice is going to get progressively deeper and deeper now because I've got a bit of a cold. But as we were talking about earlier, up until sort of 5 years ago, you couldn't really self-publish with any degree of, you know, success. I mean, some people made a go of it, but most people stayed away from it. And then Kindle came along and it opened up all these opportunities. But, you know, the opportunities are generally for authors who have been doing it the traditional way for so long, have no marketing background. A lot of people aren't that comfortable with the technology as well. And the idea of building an email list and, you know, directly communicating with customers and readers is very alien, because it's never really existed in the publishing world before. It's been around for, you know, years in other sectors of the internet space. And it's a very kind of proven method of generating good visibility and good sales and building relationships with your customers. But for authors, it's all still very new. I mean, we're still getting used to the idea of, you know, that our book can be bought by a stranger. You know, this is all very new to a lot of people. And then to have to think about all these other layers of things you have to think about is very overwhelming. But the basic breakdown is, if you're relying on third parties, other people, to do your marketing and selling for you, you don't control that. And chances are, if you're making a big success with other people doing this selling for you, like Amazon is selling your books, you know, and you've got Facebook is doing well for you, chances are it's probably because you kind of did something right and it's working right now. But that could change at any second. So Amazon can have and will change the rules. I mean, they brought in Kindle Unlimited last year. I can't even remember when it was now. But we had some very, very big name authors reporting 75% drops in sales because of, you know, how much reliance they had on the income from Amazon. And that's very dangerous. And people who built a business on Facebook, you know, in the last few months, Facebook have really clamped down on how much visibility they will give you without you paying. So people who are seeing like 40, 50% engagement on their posts are now getting like 3, 4, 5% engagement. That's, you know, that's like 95% of their business just gone because they don't control the communication. They don't control that line of communication. Whereas if you can build an email list, you own that lead, you own that prospect, that relationship with the reader is yours to control. Nobody can take it away from you. And if you do it right, you can often do a much better job than all these third-party companies could do for you anyway. So, you know, if you're relying on Amazon to push your book for you, and they are doing, that's fantastic. But if they're not doing it for you or they stop, you know, what are you going to do? And if you've got that email list built up, all you need to do is send an email. If you need reviews, if you need sales, you know, if you need beta readers, whatever it is, just send an email and you can make it happen. Mm. And that's the power of having that audience built up and ready and waiting for you. It's very powerful.
And really nice as well. Like for my fiction side, and we'll come back to how you've helped me optimize, but my fiction side, I think there is probably some more reticence. I mean, nonfiction authors, I think, have been doing email lists for a while. It's more new in the fiction space, but there is this concern. And occasionally you get emails where people just haven't got your book and you feel like a big failure because they're asking you stuff, which are just like, have you read page 49? You know, whatever.
It's a typo.
Yeah. Did you not realize that they were the killer? But then you get really nice emails where people have clearly really engaged with your world and they pick up the little extras. Like I have a bit of a hat tip to Torchwood and Doctor Who in some of my books, which only some people pick up, you know, because not everyone is a Torchwood or Doctor Who fan.
Everyone should be,
certainly. Yeah. You know, but I have that in there. And it thrills me when I get an email where people pick up that type of stuff and you feel like it's an inside joke. And I think once you start having an email list, people realize that they can email you, and it becomes actually more of a conversation. It's lovely.
Absolutely. I think the vast majority of people on your email list, if you're doing it properly, are going to be your fans. So they're the ones who are going to like what you're putting out into the world and will appreciate the fact that you've got products for them to buy. Because in most cases, you know, people have this reticence of selling because they have an experience of, you know, someone trying to sell them something they don't want. So, you know, if you're walking down the street and someone comes up and, you know, tries to get you to sign up for something or pay for something, or, you know, door-to-door salesmen's coming around, or, you know, cold calling, they're trying to sell you something you don't want. And that's a negative experience. But the way that, you know, the way that we're doing it and the way that I'm teaching people to build their community is to only get in contact with the people that we know want what we've got to sell. So you don't have to really sell anything in the kind of traditional sense. You've just got to make sure that you're hitting the right buttons and, you know, you're making something available for someone. Mm-hmm. And they will actually thank you for it. I mean, the amount of emails I get from people saying, you know, basically, thank you for letting me give you money, Nick, because I love your products. Oh, yeah. And that's a fantastic feeling. And that's the way you should build an audience, is focus on the people that you know want what you've got to offer. Mm-hmm. And if you're spamming people and collecting all these dodgy email lists and going out and trying to just grab as many people as possible, yeah, you're going to have problems. But if you do it the right way, focus on your core audience, then it can only mean good things for everybody. The readers will love you because you're giving them valuable content. You'll really love it because you're getting all this fantastic feedback. You're selling more books. You're getting more readership. Amazon's going to love it because you're sending them more paying customers. You know, everybody wins if you do it the right way. And this is what I teach authors to do. And yeah. It's fantastic.
No, I agree. So as we said, you know, I've had an email list for like 6-7 years, and my fiction list I only really started about 2 years ago, and I've always struggled with that side of of it. So you and I had a conversation and you helped me with a few, like even little changes that made a real big difference. And maybe you could just mention a couple of those, and there's a blog post on it. I'll link to it in the show notes. There's a whole list of them. But what were some of the main things that you suggested for me that, you know, that other authors can tweak that might make a difference?
It comes down to, you know, the two things you need to have a successful business online. So any business. So specifically, you know, for authors, or, you know, if you're selling coaching or gym memberships, it doesn't matter. Two things you need. You need traffic, so people actually visiting your pages, and conversions, so turning that random traffic into paying customers and subscribers. Those are the two things you need. So when I look at an author's kind of portfolio, these are the two things that I have in mind. Is how are they getting traffic? Where are they getting it from? How could they get more traffic? Because more traffic will mean more sales, because there's more people, obvious. Mm-hmm. And then I look at how are they converting random traffic into subscribers, into customers. And in 99% of cases, authors just aren't doing that second step. Mm-hmm. You know, they're getting, in some cases, getting loads of traffic through using free books, using BookBub, using Facebook ads or organic Facebook, whatever they're getting their traffic from. Some people haven't doing a great job, but in most cases, they're not doing anything to convert that traffic into repeat customers. Mm. So they send everyone to an Amazon page and let Amazon deal with it, which is fine. That does sell books. But that means that you can't then later contact that person about your new releases, because you don't own that customer. Amazon does. Mm. So what we have to do is figure out a way to take that random traffic, these, you know, these browsing readers, and turn them into fans. Get them onto our mailing list, get them onto our Facebook page, get them onto our Twitter feed, as many places as possible, so that we have more ways of communicating with them. Because, you know, one sale is great, but what if you could capture that customer's contact details with their permission, and then you could then tell them about all your future releases? You know, that one sale becomes 5, 10, 20, 100 sales down the line. And we're talking about careers here, you know, the next 10, 20, 40 years. You know, that means a lot. That means a lot more than one sale. So this is the other thing I think about when looking at authors' work is, you know, how are they doing that? How are they converting that traffic into subscribers and repeat readers? And in most cases, they're not doing it. So this is a big kind of learning curve for a lot of authors, is putting these systems and processes into place to get that done. And that's exactly what I teach people to do.
Mm. And we specifically changed. So I had on my JF Penn site, I had a call. Well, let's do the two things there. You mentioned the traffic. So at the back of my perma-free book, I had a call to action, which was come and get a free short story. So I did have a call to action. I did have a sign up, and my sign up was a text box with a text link. So I had the two things you're talking about, and many people don't even have that. So everybody listening, you need those two things. But then what we did was change the call to action to be front and back, and also make it visual with a book cover. And I'll never forget this, and I tell people a lot, because I used to give away a free short story, and you said, nobody wants a free short story. Which was great. And, you know, the point was, you have to give away something of value. So you have to give away like another book. And this is where a lot of people freak out. So basically, I've got a perma-free book, and in the front and the back is a call to action for another free book, and on the which is Day of the Vikings on my website. So they come and they sign up, and it's another visual, and they click on the visual, download the free book. So that's two free books, and I have 9 novels, so fair enough. But there are people who are worried about this. But those two changes, I can't remember the numbers now, but, you know, quite dramatically shifted the opt-ins by quite a lot. So my email list, you know, started speeding up, which was thanks to you pointing out those tweaks. So people listening, again, look at, you know, have a look at that blog post and what Nick does. And I think just the visual thing and offering something more of value, would those be two big changes that you tell other people about too?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you've only got one book, you know, you're not going to be able to offer another book for free. You know, it's not because you haven't written it. And short stories, they do work, but they don't work as well as something of a higher perceived value. So the higher the perceived value of, you know, the sign-up incentive, you know, what I call the reader magnet, what gets them to hand over that email address in the first place, the higher the perceived value of that, the more people are going to take you up on it. So if you're offering someone a short story, you know, we will get some people interested, but you'll get more people interested if you're offering them, you know, a full novel or something that they can't get anywhere else. It doesn't have to be a full book. It could be, you know, you could offer them a short story, but you could say that this short story is only available to my subscribers. And that's, you know, scarcity, because they can't physically go and buy it. Because, you know, I think you were selling that short story for like 99 cents.
Mm.
So, you know, essentially you're saying, you know, save 99 cents.
Mm.
It's not the biggest, most compelling offer in the world. But the same story that's only available to someone who signs up to your VIP list suddenly becomes a lot more compelling. And I've seen people do it with fiction as well. Mark Dawson is someone else I've talked to as well. And he offered a redacted MI6 case file for his main character, who's a, you know, it's a spy thrillers. So he created this like 3 or 4 page PDF in the style of like a spy document with, you know, all the blacked out text talking about, you know, the background of this spy character. He offered that to his mailing list, and that was something you couldn't get anywhere else. It was really personal, really interesting, gave some insight into the character and was relevant to the books. And that worked really well too. People doing nonfiction, you know, they don't have to offer another 100-page nonfiction book. They could do a cheat sheet. You know, that's like a 1-page document. People love cheat sheets. They'll go download that straight away, or a short video series or an audio version. There's no limit to what you can offer in return for an email address. But the key is you can't just ask people to join your new releases list, because people don't care enough about you yet to want to do that. So some people will, and that's fantastic. But the vast majority of people will not sign up to your mailing list unless you're giving them something of value in return. And that gives you the opportunity to prove your brand and build that relationship up over time, and then sell when the time is right later on.
Mm.
So just getting people onto your list is the biggest step you can make. So if you've only got a short story, use it. It will work. If you've got tons of novels, give away a novel. If you're doing nonfiction, think about, you know, how could you do a case study or a cheat sheet or a video? People will love that as well. If you've only got one book, you know, do some deleted scenes, do an extra bonus chapter, do a equivalent of a redacted MI5 case file. You know, it can be anything. As long as it's interesting and relevant to the book you've written, it will work, and it will get people onto your list. And that's the most important thing, is just starting off. So that's what we did with you. Was, you know, we didn't increase the amount of traffic you were getting. We just made it more effective in how we converted that traffic into subscribers. So that was the only thing that was kind of missing. So it was a couple of tweaks, you know, making it much more obvious that there was something on offer. Because it was, I think before it was a 1 or 2 sentences at the back of the book.
Yeah.
Very easily missed. And we turned that into a big, bold image with kind of click here for a free book when you join my readers group. Can't miss it. So people were clicking on it. Took them to a landing page that was very specifically designed to capture that email address without offering any other distractions. So no links to click away and go look at your biography or look at your other stuff you've got going on. Literally either sign up for my mailing list and get your free book, or click away and leave. That was the only choice we gave them. And doing those two things, I think we tripled your mailing list in like a few weeks.
Mm. Yeah, really, really
just from those
difference.
Simple things. And the same with your website as well, is we took away the sort of little sign-up box that was in the corner. So I think it said, you know, join here to get posts.
Yeah, join here
by
to
email.
Get a free short story, whatever.
Yeah,
it was really
whatever
small.
It was.
And we'll come back to the hate sales kind of attitude. But yeah, we changed that to a big visual again.
And that was it. It was just making it really, really obvious, because people skim read when they go on the internet. You know, they will zero in on something that's big and bold and bright, and they'll miss stuff in the sidebar. So sidebar stuff doesn't really work that well. If you're tracking your clicks, you won't get many in the sidebar, but you will get a lot of attention on what's at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
So we just moved the sign up box from the sidebar to the top of the page and turned it into a big image, and then linked that to the same landing page. So it wasn't even that difficult. It was literally just, we put an image in WordPress and linked it to another page.
Mm.
Really easy. And that makes all the difference. You know, just making it as easy and obvious as possible. And, you know, reinforcing what the value is you're offering, what you're bringing to the table. And people will respond.
Yeah, and I think part of my reticence there, as I mentioned, there was this. I do think there is a very a different attitude between British people and Americans in terms of being comfortable with sales in many ways, and also between authors and, let's say, internet marketers, for example. There's quite a big gap in, you know, confidence and feeling at ease. And many authors certainly think, well, you know, my books should be good enough to sell themselves. That's been the kind of attitude, you know, quality. I'm sure if you'd have stayed studying English literature, that's what they would have said, you know, a good book should just sell itself. But that's just not the reality of where we are. Do you have any feeling about the difference between, you know, sort of British and American attitudes and what we can learn, particularly?
Well, I think, you know, there is this kind of stereotype about, you know, the British being very reserved, and we don't like going out and shouting from the rooftops about ourselves. And, you know, that might be true, but it's something we can learn to do. Mm. Because if we're proud of our product, of our books, and we should be, you know, we spent months bleeding into a keyboard trying to get this book out, and we spent so much time editing and tweaking and getting it perfect. You know, it's a piece of ourselves that we put out into the world. You know, we should be proud of that. So there should be no problem with you getting up and saying, I'm proud of this book. It's something that you will enjoy and you should go read it. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And I think comparing authors with the internet marketing crowd as a whole is quite difficult, because they've got 25 years head start. You know, they've been doing this for a long time. They know what works, and we can learn a lot from them. But, you know, we have to stay away from that kind of that stereotypical used car salesman, spammy sort of kind of group of people that we don't like, and stick to, you know, building honest relationships, because that's what marketing is all about. Whether you're doing it on the internet or at a book fair or, you know, a bookstore signing or something, it doesn't matter. Your goal is to have a connection with your readers. Find out, you know, what makes them tick, what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, and build that relationship. And that's all we're doing. We're just doing it online instead of in person. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can do that is if we have their email address. You know, we can't do it through Amazon, because they won't tell us who buys our books. We can't do it really through Facebook, because they won't show your posts to anybody anymore. And you kind of have to hope that someone will respond to you. It's this idea of what's called hope marketing, which is from someone far cleverer than I am coined this term, that we shouldn't rely on hope marketing. We should control that process. And that's what we're doing by building up our platform and our mailing list. So You shouldn't be scared of it. If you're proud of your product, you should be proud to get up and tell people about it. And if you've got a problem, you know, it's something you have to work on. There's no other way around it.
Yeah, I wrote a post recently on the kind of the roller coaster of the psychology side of being an author, because of course half the time we are proud of our books and we think they're brilliant, and the other half of the time we think they're crap, and that, you know, you get that self-confidence, self-doubt issue. So I totally understand why people feel that way. I think we all go through that every day. But what I like about, once you've put this stuff into process, you know, once you've done it, you can just leave it there and then just communicate with people. So let's just talk about Facebook, because I say quite often, I'm not a fan of Facebook, really. I'm not very good at it. I don't really like it. I love Twitter, which is my social network. That's where I hang out most. But you and Mark Dawson in particular have been doing some stuff on Facebook. What do you have, some tips on Facebook and advertising and, you know, anything we should be doing there?
Yeah, I mean, I have a Facebook page. So it doesn't cost you anything to have a Facebook page. And I focus on building my email list. But then I invite my email list to join me on Facebook as well. So it's a great opportunity to have more lines of communication. But it can be very difficult to build an audience on Facebook if you're not getting traffic in the first place. It can be very difficult. And if you've got to choose between Facebook or email, you should always go with email, because you control that communication. But, you know, Facebook is good for what it is, and some people do amazingly well with it. But particularly interesting to me is the advertising. The paid advertising, because like I said, you need traffic and you need conversions to have any sort of business online. And if you need traffic, a great way to get it is by using paid advertising. So organic traffic is wonderful, but again, you don't control it. You know, it can and often does plateau. You know, you have this strong growth of traffic to your books or your website, and then you find it kind of levels out. And it can be difficult to get that going again. But if you're using paid advertising to bring more customers your way, more readers your way, that can really, really spike things up again. So Facebook advertising has always been something that I've been keeping an eye on. And, you know, in the recent months, they've really, really nailed it, you know, made it absolutely wonderful. And because they have such a huge audience of people, your perfect reader is in there somewhere, you know, in the thousands, in the tens of thousands, maybe even the hundreds of thousands. And Facebook has a great way of allowing you to build that audience and then communicate with them directly. So they have tracking pixels, conversion pixels, ways of measuring who your perfect customer or reader is. And then you can build up a group of people based on that information, and you can advertise to them through the feeds in Facebook. And, you know, it sounds very complicated. There is a bit of a learning curve to it. But the upshot is if you need more traffic, you just have to pay, go to the traffic shop and buy more traffic. And if you're doing it properly, you know, a new customer, a new reader that's costing you a dollar can make you back $5, $10, $15. It can really be that big. So literally, you know, with that return on your investment, you know, you'll be thinking, how much money do I have saved up? Can I sell the house and just put all my money in this? Because it's getting
you
like...
We're not recommending that.
Yes, this isn't official investment advice. But, you know, specific results that I've had, you know, with my nonfiction side of things especially, is I was getting new customers through a sort of $1.25. That's how much it was costing me to acquire this customer. But I was earning $13 later on down the line from each customer. And, you know, that kind of level of return is insane. Mm. And the fact that you can scale this as far as you want to go with Facebook, because they have, you know, over a billion people using it, is just, the opportunity is incredible. Mm. So if you can get that right, it can be a really big source of traffic to your business. And if you're converting that traffic into subscribers and loyal readers, then your business can explode, you know, very quickly. As long as you're doing it in the right way. Otherwise, you can throw a lot of money at it and get no results, of course, which does happen. But if you're doing it in the right way and you're following a process, it can be amazing. It can be absolutely fantastic.
Well, that's good. And I mean, I did try Facebook marketing when it first came out, and, you know, it was pretty dire then. So it's interesting you say in the last few months they've nailed it, and I'm definitely up for trying it again. What's interesting, of course, is Amazon have now introduced, Amazon Marketing Services have introduced a similar thing where you can, well, I say similar, you know, not really very similar, but, you know, in a way you can target a group of people or certain books or, you know, keyword things. And a lot of us have tried it. It's not really working, but perhaps it will be like Facebook, whereas it'll take a couple of years for them to really nail it. I mean, what do you think that's got a future?
Absolutely. I mean, Amazon at the moment, if anyone's not familiar with the pay-per-click advertising that Amazon's got, what you can do at the moment is is a minimum spend of $100, and you put $100 into the pot, and you select your target customer using basically the book categories. Mm. So you say, right, mysteries and thrillers, advertise my mystery or thriller to anyone who's browsing mysteries and thrillers. So, you know, sounds great. But that's all you can do. There's no other ways
you can do it by book. I've chosen book, like six books or something, but haven't spent any money. Can't spend any money.
So it's already getting better. I mean, when it first started out, literally all you could do is choose a category that you wanted to associate your advert with. And it's you know, it's an interesting start, but I don't think anyone has reported any successes with it yet. Mm. I mean, I certainly didn't have any results from it. I mean, I put $100 into it. I got some clicks, no sales, and I think I ended up getting most of my money back at the end of it, because they couldn't give me enough clicks to spend the money. So it was a bit disappointing. But I think, you know, Facebook ads, when they first started, got a lot of flack as well. But now they've refined it to the point where you can literally target an individual using Facebook ads. You know, it's very powerful. And I think Amazon will get to that point, hopefully, within the next few years. And when they do, I think it's going to be absolutely incredible. But right now, I think it's Facebook ads for the win. I mean, I've had some great great results with them, and so have a lot of other authors as well.
Mm. And I mean, we have to be very careful here. I mean, if you're brand new and you've only got one book and, you know, just starting, these really are advanced kind of tactics. And also you don't get the sell through with one book. So if you pay $1.25 for a customer and your book is 99 cents or whatever, and you're not putting them on an email list, don't do it, people. But if you've got a few books, like, you know, I've got 7 books in one series now, and you've got similar, haven't you, in your Leopold Blake series? If you've got that many books in a series, you can get demonstrated evidence that people are going and buying more than one book,
then it
could be worth it. But certainly if you have higher priced product like nonfiction or courses like you have, then it's clearly a no-brainer. So no, I'm definitely interested in having a look at that. Okay. So do you have a video on that or something? Do you actually teach that at the moment?
What we have at the moment is I do offer premium courses that helps authors build their platform and basically do everything we've talked about today and, you know, do it well without any trial and error. Just this is what works. Just you can follow the process. And we do talk about Facebook ads, how to set them up, you know, specifically what mistakes to avoid in the premium training. But because this is premium training, we want to make sure that the education is right for the people signing up for it. So very deliberately, I've put together 90 minutes of free video content that goes through, you know, a lot of what we talked about today. So how to optimize your books, how to understand the different e-retailer environments, how to get started building your email list using the topics we've talked about in the last few minutes. And that's available and people can sign up. They can get that preview content. And then later on, when the course enrollment opens up again, you'll be on the waiting list and you can find out more. And if that's something you want to invest in, you know, you can ask me questions. You know, I'll take you through the whole process. But if you go over to yourfirst10kreaders.com, you can get a case study that shows how this helped another author jumpstart his sales from like $20 a month to $3,000 a month within like 6 weeks. And then 3 videos, which take you through step by step how to get started with this process, you know, and it will take you a long way. And that's my biggest tip. I think if you want to find out exactly how to do all this stuff, you can go get the free training and get started pretty much straight away.
And it is excellent training, and I will link to it. And if anyone would like to use my link to Nick's training, it's at thecreativepen.com/10k. You have really great video series and a really great course, actually. That's where I found out about the Q&A with the author thing, which I, you know, sometimes you just have to learn things sequentially.
And absolutely.
I think that's really important to stress. You know, I've mentioned that you've helped me optimize my email list, and you know, I've been doing this for 6 years now, so I think every time you go through material you learn something new. And also things keep changing, don't they? I mean, you know, like we've said about the Amazon ads, people are so negative right now about it, but you'd think that it will improve over time. And you know, very interesting. Yeah. So is there anything, just also we mentioned, you know, if you look, the algorithms are like, you know, Google 2 years ago, we're talking about email marketing, which is old hat for internet marketers. Do you see anything coming? Like, what is exciting you around the marketing space that could be coming? Because we're definitely looking, you know, using stuff that's a few years old in the space. So what is coming next, do you think? What's exciting?
So I think for me is, you know, you can talk about how Amazon changes its algorithms. You know, you could talk about that for hours and hours and hours, but that's not the exciting thing for me. Amazon will change aspects of their business, and you kind of have to be aware of what's going on so that you can roll with the punches if you need to. But the far more important thing for you to do is, you know, don't obsess about whether Amazon's recommending you or you're getting into also boards. Don't worry too much about that. Focus on building your audience. And what I'm really excited about is developing relationships directly with my readers and my customers, and learning more about what they want and what makes them excited and what, you know, brings them value. That's what I'm excited about. And technology coming that allows me to do that more effectively without needing to spend all day writing out emails, you know, making that whole process more efficient is what's exciting to me, because I can reach more people. More people will read my books, more people will take the course, and then more people will develop their author careers as well. And seeing that happen is what's really exciting to me. So if Amazon decides to completely, you know, change the way it does business, you know, if you've built that audience up, it doesn't matter because you just take them somewhere else. Mm. So that's what's exciting for me, is seeing other authors do this as well, because it's, you know, it's very powerful. It's very exciting stuff.
Yes, we do live in exciting times. Fantastic.
For better or worse, yeah.
Yeah, so just once more, tell us where people can find you online.
So come find me at thecreativepen.com/10K. Use Joanna's link so we can actually figure out who's coming from where.
Lovely, yeah.
Tracking stuff is good. And that's the best link to find me, because you sign up for the free training, you'll learn lots of great actionable stuff, and then some other content that I've got as well, some surprise bonuses. I'll send them to you. I'll make sure that you're kept up to date with everything that's going on. So that's absolutely the best place to find me.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time, Nick. That was great.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.